Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit the subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and our guest today, Evan Dial. What's cooking, fellas?
Hey, Nick, how's it going today?
You know, I'm just getting ready to play a game of Mousetrap. I got a mouse in my house. So,
while Corey handles that situation, you can always listen to the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com. But today we are talking Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, the last two times we talked about the Cavs has been kind of that negative aspect. Today we're going to talk positive. Cavs are on that 9-game winning streak. LeBron is playing great. What are your thoughts on this team? Are they back? Are they ready to dominate the Eastern Conference?
I think they're back, and their offense certainly is. I believe fourth in the league. LeBron's never been better. Career marks across the board, field goal, three-point, and free throw percentage. A couple nice wins in the streak. Their bench has been one of the best bench units in the league with Dwayne Wade and Korver playing great. They got Love going last night. He had 38 in his best game of the season. Defensively, they're starting to improve little by little. They're no longer last in the league. So 9 wins in a row. They're streaking at the right time, and they're looking good, and I think we can safely say they're back.
Yeah, this has been definitely the best stretch for the Cavs. I get a little bit of a lighter schedule. You know, they had two or three nice comeback wins where they were down, and they LeBron, for the most part, willed them to a victory. Like you mentioned, Evan, Kevin Love had his best game last night. LeBron had a bullshit ejection. Wade has been extremely good after the, you know, NBA Twitter went on the huge, he's washed, he's officially done, look at what he is. The Cavs made a mistake. This team's too old. And Wade is arguably the third or fourth best player on this team right now. And in a good way. Not like, you know, this team is that bad that he's the third best player. But in a good way, he's their third or fourth best player. LeBron keeps on putting up MVP-type numbers. You know, like you mentioned, too, having Kyle Korver has been lethal from deep. I've never been a huge Kyle Korver guy. And I feel like every time I go on a record saying something bad about Kyle Korver, he generally goes out and hits like 5 or 6 threes the next game anyways, just to make me look stupid. But he continues to impress it at the backside of his career. Channing Frye has been getting some solid minutes recently. And he even tweeted last night, like, I haven't ran that fast in like 1984. He had like a fast break layup or something. They're gaining momentum. And like LeBron said, we're going streaking.
They are. And Kevin Love, before we start talking about the Cavs, isn't this so weird that Kevin Love always has these giant, like, first half, first quarters, and then in the second half, it seems like he doesn't do anything? Like, I think yesterday he had 35 at the half, and it looked like he probably could hit 50, and I think he finished with 38. Why do you guys think, like, Love just falls off in the second half?
I can't even begin to try to explain. I mean, I know they kind of force feed him the ball in the first quarter, try to get him going. So I can get why he has stronger first halves. I do not know why he in the second half. Maybe that just designated LeBron time. But you're right. It reminded me of that Portland game last year where he had like a gazillion points in the first and then did nothing.
I just don't think they feed him as much in the, like, I think the game plan just changed in the second half because, you know, he was 10 for 16 shooting. So it's not like he went cold. He just stopped being the vocal point of the offense. And granted, they had a pretty substantial lead at that point. So, you know, you're not really – he only played 25 minutes as well. So he had 38 points in 25 minutes. So I think just think the game plan kind of changed. It's still weird to see J.R. Smith somehow played 41 minutes. Not really sure what the strategy was in that. But, yeah, I just think the game plan changes.
2 of 9 from 3 for JR in 42 minutes, but let him play. But you guys mentioned the bench, you know, Evan and Corey, you know, Wade, Korver. And Korver, like you said, he's just looked great, hitting a ton of contested threes. I've never been able to hit contested threes in my entire life, and Korver just makes it look so easy. But him and Wade, Korver and Wade are plus 133 when they're on the floor together this season.
Wow, yeah, I mean, that's amazing. They both look like they got a little more you know, bouncing their step and looking spry. They've been awesome. And that bench unit with LeBron, they just destroy people.
Yeah, it's cool how they've used LeBron this year as kind of like Russell Westbrook last year, except the supporting cast I think is a lot better. LeBron can pretty much go with any unit, and they're going to have some sort of success offensively just because of the presence he puts on the court. And I feel like everyone on the court feels more confident when they have LeBron James alongside of them, which is, I mean, that's pretty much a given, I would think.
Yeah, it's like LeBron's like your safeguard. Like, he protects you. Nothing bad's going to happen when LeBron's there. If it does, like, you know, you're just kind of fucked. But talking about LeBron putting up huge numbers, 25 plus points a game, like you mentioned, shooting percentages are great. I think 57 from the field, 42 from three, 8 assists, 8 rebounds, block, a steal, 4 turnovers. Could this be LeBron's best season ever?
Most definitely. I think he looks better than ever this year, especially in terms of efficiency. And he's definitely in the MVP running, maybe only slightly behind Harden now, but the way he's lifted this team after the rough start and just got everyone on the same page and continues to play heavy minutes and dominate in all phases of the game, absolutely incredible. And I'd never doubt him and never pick against him.
I mean, he hasn't averaged this many points per game since since his last stint in Cleveland in 2009-2010 when he averaged 29.7. Then he, you know, he averaged 26, 27, 26, 27, 25, 25, 25, 26. So, like, he's just – you don't normally see a 32-year-old raise his points per game. I mean, obviously it's LeBron James, so it's not like this is unheard of. But he's been incredible. He's definitely second in the MVP race. You can make an argument that he's first, but I think James Harden has just been incredible. Dominant. You just can't you can't dismiss what he's been doing over in Houston. But LeBron's definitely in this race. And if anything was to happen to Harden or if Harden was to slip off production, I don't see LeBron's production slipping. I just he doesn't rely on his jump shot too much, even though he's been hitting it this year. He still gets to the rim. I know he complained after the game that he's not getting as many fouls called. So now I'm just, you know, guessing that he will start getting more fouls called because LeBron James is just kind of how this thing works. And he's been killing everyone from the three-point line at the same exact spot. Has no one else noticed this? That he goes to the same spot at the top of – or not the top of the arc, like right to the side, and he does like a one dribble move crossover and hits a three, and no one seems to want to defend him when he's over there. It's pretty absurd.
Yeah, and it's like, to be honest, you know, it's just super tough to defend LeBron in that position because what, are you going to crowd him at the line? He's just going to gas past you and muscle you to the rim. So it's just like when LeBron's hitting his three-point shot – we've said this for years, you know, he's not really defendable, especially with his passing ability against double teams. That's when LeBron's playing lights out, the Cavs are very tough to beat. It's just more so the defensive end. What are they going to do when they face a Golden State? But you mentioned this before. We'll talk about the ejection last night. What were your thoughts on LeBron getting ejected? From my view, it only looked like he got one tech in that situation. The ref just said bye-bye.
Yeah, I agree with you. It looked like just a one tech situation, and then the ref just wanted to make a power move by tossing LeBron for the first time in his career. But yeah, overall, I would say a pretty ridiculous ejection.
You know, it's just like I've seen guys do worse.
Draymond.
I guess if LeBron James ran at me, like, I'd probably be a little bit intimidated. But I mean, all LeBron did was run over, and I mean, he only had about 5 seconds to yell whatever he was yelling in 5 seconds. And I'm not even sure how many words you can get out in 5 seconds. I saw a couple of memes where it was like, he was probably saying like, I'm going to burn down your house or whatever that movie is with Will Ferrell. I don't know. It was definitely surprising. It definitely wasn't warranted of an ejection. I did find something funny, though. Wade mentioned this after the game. Wade has only been ejected one time, and it was against the Cavs. And now LeBron's only ejection has been against the Heat, whatever that is.
Interesting. Yeah, and it was weird, too, because the game was a blowout. It wasn't like, you know, a super physical game where everything was like, you know, people are yelling at the refs constantly, and he just kind of, you know, kicked them out. It was weird, especially LeBron. The ref knows who LeBron is, so, like, kicking him out, you better have a good reason. Do you think the NBA should look at some point in fining referees for bad calls or mistakes in big situations, or no?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Could be a slippery slope because a lot of dirty laundry could get out there about refs, but there definitely should be some sort of system in which the NBA can control the refs and monitor and how well they fare in certain situations just for the sake of improving the officiating overall, but they would definitely have to keep it under wraps and not try to leak too much information about it, I think.
I say no. I definitely don't think you should fine a referee, because I don't think referees make that much money to begin with, especially because my dad umpires for baseball, and I know he doesn't make a ton from it. And also, you know, referees have such a hard job. I mean, there's three of them or four of them, whatever there is, and they have to call everything in real time. It's not easy. As Nick, I know you've umpired or ref before as well. It's not easy. I do not think they should be penalized for bad calls. Mistakes happen.
Yeah, no, you are right. NBA refs, though, do get paid well. I believe they make, like, probably close to 100K a year or something crazy because so many NBA games. But I think you're right. Out of all the sports I reffed, I only did intramural college sports. I didn't do anything close to professional. But basketball is by far the toughest. Just like it is so quick and there's so many angles where you have to try to see everything and it just happens so fast. I mean, I think in certain situations, there should be a grading system, and a ref just isn't cutting it, then they need to kind of, you know, push him down to more training, bring somebody up. I think it's something they need to be on top of. But kind of like what Evan said, I don't think it'd be something you could do publicly, because everybody would be like, oh, that's a shitty ref. He's reffing our game. Like, if your team loses, it'd be kind of like throw that ref under the bus. And like Corey said, it's already hard to do. So it would have to be something behind closed doors. And I don't think you could use money, but you could reprimand them. And, you know, like, you'd have so many bad games, you're suspended for a week or something along those lines, or you have to do some more training.
Or do something in which you tie in maybe G League refs and professional refs. And say you're struggling, you go down to the G League. It's no, you know what I'm saying, like, you have to, like, work get on reps. Whatever you're doing wrong. Yeah, something like that.
Exactly. And then a G League ref is doing really well, bring him up. They use the G League all the time to test out new rules and stuff. So it'd be great, you know, great to test out refs there too as well. They probably do. But talking about LeBron getting ejected, you know, Enes Kanter had something to say about it. What are your thoughts on Kanter's tweet circling the referee and calling him the King of Cleveland?
Hilarious. And just amazing. I love that this feud is now a thing. The NBA is better for it. Enes Kanter, keep up the good work, buddy.
I'm tired of him talking, though. LeBron was right. He's always got something to say. You know, he's played 17 games this year. He's missed the last, what, five or whatever due to an injury. He said he was going to pay fines for players if they start fighting. Like, this dude just became like a loose cannon overnight. Like, I'm not sure what happened. He was like a quiet guy. I mean, he wasn't quiet because he was when OKC met up with the Warriors last year. But he just seems to be getting more and more confidence. I'm not sure where it's coming from, but hell, I guess keep riding the wave.
Dude, when I saw that tweet about he's willing to pay if his teammates get into fights, like, bro, first off, you're not balling like that. You're not, like, the highest paid player ever, and not like your teammates aren't making money anyways. And, like, why are you telling guys to get into fights? Like, you guys aren't good enough that you can't give away free throws late in games. I think it was in a game against Portland. The Knicks were making a comeback, and then somebody got a technical, and then next thing you know, oh, it was Frank Ntilikina got a tech, and Michael Beasley got a tech. Blazers shoot two free throws, ends the Knicks run, and the Blazers go on to get the W. You don't want your teammates fighting. It doesn't help you.
He is making money, though, this year. He's making $20 million. I didn't even realize he's making $20 million a year.
Well, that's why OKC wanted to get rid of him. I mean,
yeah.
They were put in a tough position, which I always thought this is going back some time, but I always thought it was crazy how OKC was willing to put out the extra money to make sure they could re-sign Enes Kanter, but a few years back, they weren't willing to put out that money to make sure they could keep Serge Ibaka and James Harden. So that was always like, OKC, why did you do that?
He's got a weird contract, too. He made 16, 17, then 20, and then if he accepts his player option for next year, it's back down to $18 million. So this is just like an outlier.
Oh, that's a reason why he's playing so well, too, contract year. But talking about big men, let's talk about somebody in the Western Conference who is dealing with an injury, which is something we frequently talk about, which kind of sucks because he's a great player, and that's Blake Griffin. Sprained MCL, and he could be out 2 months. What are your thoughts on Blake going down again? Kardashian curse or what?
It's so sad. He is such a great player, but injuries it's like he has to have at least one a year and miss now, I guess, 2 months. And it ruins their season. They already lost Beverly. Gallinari's out. It looks like they'll go rebuild, maybe try to trade DeAndre Jordan. For Blake and the Clippers, though, they just signed him to that 5-year max deal. And it was looking good early, but now that's got to cause serious concerns, and if he can ever, you know, stay reasonably healthy. So it spells doom for the Clippers this year and potentially in the long term as well.
It's more like the Rivers curse, right? It's like wherever Doc Rivers goes, he had a trade for Austin Rivers. This one injury for me is just like, it sucks because this isn't like a normal Blake Griffin injury. This is one of those freak accident injuries where a player falls and you get caught underneath them. It's just bad. It's just wrong place, wrong time. Lucky that was just a sprain. That looked extremely ugly from the videos. That looked far worse. My dad today, he's going to have his knee looked at because he possibly tore his ACL. And I said in the video, Blake Griffin, I said, this was just an MCL sprain. I hope it's just the same for you. But, you know, 2 months is a long time in the NBA. And like you said, Evan, I wouldn't be surprised if they try and move DeAndre and they try and push this thing towards a rebuild.
Yeah, especially with Blake being that key point. He's averaging 23 points a game, seven, almost eight rebounds, five assists. So he's kind of that key cog, and they already have a ton of injuries with Pat Bev, Tito Stitch, Gallinari. So like you said, I think do you think the Clipper season is kind of over now? Like, you know, there's not really a chance in the playoffs of the West that Blake's going to miss 2 months.
Yeah, I think they're done. 2 months is just too long of a time to survive, especially with the other injuries they have. And the depth behind them is not great. I think they just have to accept the reality and go rebuild, move Jordan, and then I'd be surprised if Doc Rivers is there past this season, because I want to label as a good rebuild coach to have.
Yeah, I agree. He needs a set environment for him to go. I definitely think DeAndre will be on the block. And I guess, I mean, Lou Williams too. I wouldn't be surprised if Lou Williams got traded again too.
Yeah, he can add some scoring pop.
Yeah, I mean, he's been ridiculous for them for the most part this year. And you can't tell me there's not a team that's in contention or any team that wouldn't want a Lou Williams off the bench.
Yeah, in like looking at the Clippers, pretty much their whole starting lineup is out. Beverly, Tedosic, Gallinari, Griffin. The only guy left is DeAndre. And so we kind of agree the Clippers season's kind of over. So where do you think the Clippers should look to trade DeAndre? If you had to give me a few teams or a few ideas where you think he could end up going. Obviously, Cleveland's been mentioned, but where else do you think is possible?
Besides Cleveland, I know Washington would love him, but I'm not sure they have the assets or the money to make that work, even though I think that would be a great fit. Milwaukee can use some help up front, but they just, you know, they gave up a lot for Bledsoe. Besides, those are a couple of contender teams in the East to do it. Then it'll be interesting to see if any bad teams were on to make a run at him. But I have a feeling it would be more of a contender that would be interested.
I got a few. So I'm looking at Cleveland. I think you can't rule out, like, the Celtics if they wanted to get a center to add some rim protection and rebounding for them. I think Milwaukee would be interesting because they definitely have some trouble down low. But like you said, you know, they traded that second-round pick and Greg Monroe. And I feel like Thon Maker is still the guy you want to build around at the center position. It would make no sense for Brooklyn, but I know Brooklyn – possibly could maybe offer some of the young assets for a center if they wanted that. The Suns could give up Tyson Chandler and something for DeAndre.
The Suns are always getting involved in trades. Like, no matter what, if they're irrelevant, they always want to get a star player. So that honestly is a pretty good poke right there, because I wouldn't be surprised if they're mentioned. I don't know if they'd make the trade, but Phoenix always seems like somebody, like they were in Kevin Love trade talk, Paul George, Kyrie Irving, like, and they're not good.
But those are my top teams.
The only issue I think with DeAndre, it's like the Clippers will be in a weird situation because for a couple reasons. Bobby Marks pointed this out yesterday. DeAndre has no agent. So you're not able to kind of communicate and know if DeAndre is going to sign long term. Right now, his contract is expiring. He has a player option at the end of the year for $24 million. Probably, I would think, with the lack of, you know, great bigs on the market, I would think he might opt out and look to get a big deal. So it's like, am I going to give up a lot of assets for DeAndre if I don't know if he's going to return? So what do you think is going to be the asking price from the Clippers for DeAndre?
Well, I think the Clippers, they certainly want a first-round pick. I'm not sure. Because I know they have to give one to Boston. I forget if that's this year or next. But they may not have a first. But I think regardless, they'll definitely want a first. And that's why with the Cleveland deal, the rumor was a first-round pick and Tristan Thompson. So probably something around that, a first and one or two solid rotation players. And I think that's about a fair price for who DeAndre Jordan is.
Yeah, I definitely think they're going to want a first. You might even be able to get away with like a young player and a second round pick if the young player is something that they're interested in. But it's definitely not going to be – I don't see like an Eric Bledsoe trade, like a Greg Monroe and a second round pick happening for a DeAndre Jordan. They're going to have to give a little bit more because I think he's a guy who plays both ends of the floors. And especially if you have a decent playmaking point guard, DeAndre Jordan becomes that much more valuable.
Yeah, and the fact that I think he hasn't asked for the trade, the leverage is still there for the Clippers, where so in the other situations, you know, Bledsoe, Hair Salon, all that nonsense didn't really work out. So I think that kind of helps the Clippers, and they don't have a ton of pressure. If I was them, I'd kind of sit on it and kind of wait on deals for the next few months because, you know, you don't have to move them to the deadline. Just make sure you get something before free agency starts and kind of start that full rebuild because this is another clean – Evan and I were talking about the Grizzlies' young talent, but if you look at the Clippers – not much young talent on this team. No real player you can build around that from the youth.
You mean you can't build around Austin Rivers?
Maybe trade Austin and Doc in a combo package. But talking about bad teams where the Clippers could be real soon if they make these trades, I want to know, who is your worst team in the league this season so far?
Right now, it's probably – it's between the Bulls and the Kings. I think are the two worst. I think the Bulls are a little better set in terms of the long term because they got to, you know, market in and he looks like he could be a franchise sort of player. But right now, they're probably the worst team in the league.
Yeah, for me, it's a toss up between the Bulls and my Hawks. Not my Hawks, actually, but my hatred for the Hawks, I suppose. I think the Bulls have the worst plus minus in the league at like minus 12.
Yep, negative 12.
Yeah, and then the Kings are minus 6 or whatever, and the Hawks are minus 6 as well. I'm going to say the Bulls are the worst team.
Yeah.
Even though they've had a few nice performances from guys like Lowry, whatever the hell you say his name. Denzel Valentine has finally gotten some good minutes.
Yeah, and Dunn had a few good games. He's also had a couple bad ones too. I'm going to go with the Bulls as well. I think, like you said, that negative 12 plus minus is pretty bad. Then you just look at the roster. There's not like a ton of super talent. Obviously, one of their better players, Zach LaVine, being out hurts. Then obviously you have the off-the-court stuff with the Bobby Portis and Mirotić thing. They still haven't spoken yet. So I think the Bulls right now for me are bad. You know, you watch them and you're just like, how are these guys going to score?
Yeah, their offense is brutal, but Bobby Portis is I wonder what they're going to do with him because he's played pretty well since he's come back.
A lot of good energy from him. He just is always hustling.
Yeah, so I wonder if they're going to look to – because Mirotić is a free agent, and so a lot of different ways that could go. If they look to trade him at the deadline because you just have to trade a player who punched a teammate in the face. But they could probably get some pretty good value for him, and he could certainly help some teams.
I got an interesting question before we get out of here for you guys. What are your thoughts on rebuilding teams trading young players? For example, like, you know, if the Bulls were to move a Bobby Portis, or there's been talk about the Nets moving a Spencer Dinwiddie. What kind of – do you think that makes sense for rebuilding teams to move the young player and try to get more assets, or they should just hold on to these guys because they need players?
Overall, I would say, like, with Spencer, I would definitely hold on to him if I was the Nets. And the good teams are the ones who are able to develop their young players, just like the Spurs and the Warriors. So, overall, I would say hold on to them. The Bulls are a little different because Portis has punched someone in the face. So, that's a different – but overall, I think you should try to hold on to young players and develop because – you don't want to give up on players too quickly and then see them succeed somewhere else. You know, look at Oladipo with the Pacers, Tobias Harris with the Pistons. You never know when, you know, the light bulb could finally click. So you want to make sure you get the most out of them while you have them.
Both former Magic players.
Yeah, I was about to say that. A little shade there, Orlando. Yeah, I would definitely not trade. I don't like trading young players to a degree. At least, I mean, like D'Angelo Russell, he was traded far too soon. Both guys you mentioned, Evan and Tobias Harris and Victor Oladipo, and moved a guy like Dinwiddie. Or whatever. Is that right?
Dinwiddie? Yep, you got it right.
All right. You know, why would you move him? You know, Jeremy Lin can't stay healthy. D'Lo's out. Like, having a guy like that, you know, that's valuable to your team when you have guys who are missing time with injuries and can possibly miss more time with injuries. Like, I wouldn't want to trade that guy at all, especially with how he's played.
Yeah, I'm all for keeping young players. I just wanted to ask you guys, get your input. I still wonder about that Tobias Harris trade from Orlando to Detroit. Like, they literally got him for nothing, and I was still, like, mind-blown at the time, and I'm still mind-blown at it now, especially I think Tobias the other night dropped, like, 30-plus against the Celtics.
Yeah, he's cooking, and that was certainly a bad trade.
A couple of those from Orlando, but that's enough for today. Corey, Evan, thank you for hopping on. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening. You can listen to NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and OTGBasketball.com.
Got me a mouse to kill.
Good luck.